Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
I drove out by myself on Friday afternoon to Pittsburgh area on the turnpike by myself. And I think that's probably when I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, this is, I'm actually driving to go play this tournament now. This is awesome. This is really great. Enjoy this.
And our guest this week is Drexel University product professional golfer Chris Crawford. And Chris, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me on, Matt. I appreciate it.
So talk a little bit about life's been crazy for the last year and a half, but I know you've been playing through it. You qualified for the U.S. Open this year. Where are you playing? What are you doing these days?
It's been a little bit of an interesting ride over the last year and a half, but thankfully golf has been able to play for a large majority of that. So, you know, I spend the winter times in Sarasota, Florida. So that's where I was last year and for the first half of 2020 and then the first half of 21 again. And I spend most of the summers in the fall here in Bensalem, where I'm from originally.
How often are you playing these days? How many tournaments on average, stuff like that? Or is it kind of all over the place?
No, I mean, pretty often, you know, I'm playing five, 6 days a week. I usually try to take off about a day to give myself a little bit of a rest. And then tournaments have been, you know, scheduling and everything's always a little difficult. So, but I try to play as much as I can. Lately, it's been picking up a little bit this summer. Played a handful of tournaments, obviously starting with Torrey in June. And then there was kind of a little lull actually after that for about a month, and then played some state opens, some mini tour events, and a couple events here that were actually in our area over the last couple of weeks. And then just gearing up for Q School at this point in the fall for Korn Ferry.
Yeah. And for people that aren't familiar, explain what Q School is. And Korn Ferry is kind of the lane that feeds into the PGA Tour, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, back, you know, 10 years ago, they used to do Q School directly to get into the PGA Tour. And that's how it always was for forever. And then the PGA Tour made the change, made the Korn Ferry Tour kind of the direct feeder tour into the PGA Tour. So that's your way getting out there now. So Q School now is just for the Korn Ferry, three stages plus a pre-qualifying stage. So really four stages in the fall to try to get the top 40 in ties, I think, at final stage, end up getting their Korn Ferry card, and then the Korn Ferry guys advance to the PGA Tour. So that's how they have it set up now. So I have to go to first stage in about 2 weeks, and then everything kind of wraps up kind of quickly. They do it all in about a month and a half now. final stages in maybe the second week of November, and then the season starts in January. So they comes at you quickly, and you got to be ready to play a lot of good rounds pretty fast. There's not a lot of room for error in this stuff.
How you feel about how you're playing right now? You feel like you're in a good spot?
Yeah, certainly not bad. I think I was able to play the last two Form Tour events, which was the, usually it's the Mackenzie Tour, but the Canadian border was shut down for most of the summer, obviously. And they added a tour in the U.S. called the Form Tour, and played about eight events. I was able to have status there, didn't play most of the season, but was able to get a sponsor's exemption into the Rolling Green event, which they had obviously just outside of Philly. And I played Rolling Green a lot growing up over the years, just in tournaments and stuff. So I was able to get into that event, and then played well enough in that event to get into the tour championship the following week up in Wilkes-Barre. Getting to play those two events was kind of a nice little prep, hopefully going into Q school here in a couple of weeks. So I think things are coming along all right.
So let's talk about the origin of golf in your life. Was it something you were exposed to as a youngster? Were you a kid that played everything and just eventually you realized how much you enjoyed golf and that you were good at it? Kind of give me how it started.
Yeah. So I started playing golf when I was very little, like pretty much basically just after I could walk. I had plastic clubs and cut down clubs, you know, and I was always very interested in the game. My right around when I was born and my early childhood kind of coincided with my dad kind of picking up the game and starting to play. He didn't play growing up or anything, but in his 20s, he was getting more into it around the time I came along. And I had, you know, me and my brother, we both played a lot of sports growing up, just kind of like any kid would, right? Just doing, I played a ton of baseball growing up. I played soccer, but I knew golf was always kind of my favorite. And from when I was little, even though other things were going on, I still tried to play golf on the side. And I kind of always knew that was by far my favorite of the sports, but played a lot of other things. So I didn't really start competing in golf until maybe a little bit later than some other juniors, even though I played a handful of tournaments here. Didn't really know I wanted to play in college probably until mid high school was really when I thought that maybe that was something I could try to do. But it was always something I tried to get out and do as much as I could, and really always wanted to do it. I never knew that I would be trying to play professionally. That was not something that I was like gunning for from a young age. You know, it just, that didn't happen until much later that I thought I might try this. But I don't know if that answers your question.
No, absolutely. So I'm curious, you obviously loved the sport as a youngster. What was it about golf that just clicked with you even as a kid?
It's a good question. I think I've always been the personality wise. I felt like it always worked for me. I've always been more of an easygoing person, you know, kind of laid back. The pace of the game always, I think, fit me well. Even I was not like a really hyper kid or anything like that. So I was fine with just hanging out and playing. And I don't remember a time in my life where I didn't love playing the game. It's just something that, you know, goes back before I can remember. I was born in 94. So when I was really little, that was the Tiger era was really getting going. Those are some of my earliest golf memories, watching those events. I watched a lot of golf from a young age if I could. And a lot of people my age was certainly inspired by that and by everything that was going on there with him and what he was able to do. And always loved the history of the game, loved learning about it, golf courses. You know, I grew up on a Donald Ross golf course, which was at Lulu Country Club, which was perfect for a young kid to learn the game, perfect to get exposed to a historic old golf course that was really great for a young kid, for somebody growing up to play. And I don't know, just always, we just always clicked, me and the game a little bit.
So you talk about you didn't think about playing in college till halfway through high school, but was there a moment when it crystallized for you that you were better than most of the people you were playing with and against? Like, even as a 12, 13, 14-year-old, did you notice you were able to make shots and manage a course a little better than the folks around you?
I don't know if there was ever a moment. I always felt like I was improving, I guess, every year, right? Like, you could notice that I kept getting a little bit better. And like I said, I was playing a lot of baseball growing up. And, you know, so my time in golf was somewhat limited. So I think that always gave me maybe a little bit extra thought that, hey, if I ever did play this full time or really, really had a lot of time to practice and play more tournaments, that I could even get any better. And so I kept seeing like little improvements, not that I was doing anything great necessarily, but, you know, tiny little improvements every year through high school. And then high school was kind of the same thing. I just, I did fine as a freshman. I just kind of felt like I made little improvements, started to play some tournaments and maybe would play a little bit better in a couple tournaments here or there. So I don't know if there was ever one moment necessarily, but I did kind of notice those little incremental changes. And by the time I was junior year, you know, sophomore, junior year in high school, I thought maybe I'd like to try to play somewhere in college. I don't know where that would work out, but I'd at least like to try to do that. And I thought I could do that.
And you went to Holy Ghost Prep, correct?
Yes.
So talk about the road to Drexel. How do you end up a Dragon? Once you did start to think that this was something for college, did they come after you? Were they one of many you were looking at? Kind of give us the origin story of you heading to Drexel.
Definitely not many. Definitely not one of many. One of me, very a couple, not very many. So the whole college recruiting process, I was very late in the game. You know, most kids that are going to playing high level college golf, they're playing AJGA tournaments and these junior events that are getting recruited from, you know, pretty early on in the game. Most of the big colleges have their recruits lined up when they're, you know, 16 sophomore juniors in high school, ready to go. So how I ended up at Drexel was an interesting kind of stroke of fate that was just basically just coincidence. It was my senior year so it would have been October, my senior year, actually about 10 years ago, when we were playing the district championships at Turtle Creek for Holy Ghost, which we played every year. It was always at Turtle Creek. And I played decently well. I can't remember how I finished in the event, but Drexel's coach at the time, Mike Dinda, was out doing recruiting. He was out following some groups at Turtle Creek, just by chance followed my group. I don't think he knew who I was at all. And he followed us around for a few holes. I didn't know who he was. And I guess he liked me enough. I think he just liked the fact that I played a little bit of a draw. I think since he saw that in himself, played a little bit of a draw or maybe even like a little bit of a hook most of the time. And he left me his phone number in some way and ended up giving me a call some point after that. And that was the first time I had heard, you know, any interest from Drexel specifically. And then from there, it just kind of went. At that point, I didn't have a ton of other interest from other schools and it was getting pretty late. You know, most people by that time in their senior year have an idea of where things are going. And we clicked and got along together and he said, hey, you know, what do you think? And a couple months later, I still waited a couple months. I was a little indecisive. And by that winter time, I think I knew where I was going, but it was, you know, it was just one of those things. You're in high school, you send emails out to like a bunch of different schools and maybe some of them respond. You try to contact them a lot of times and maybe a couple of them are polite. Some of them probably don't respond at all, but yeah, Drexel really wasn't on my radar until I met Mike around that time. And then things just kind of went from there.
So you arrive at Drexel, feel comfortable right away. Is it a big transition to the world of being a collegiate golfer?
Actually, no, it was a very comfortable transition for me. I walked into what I thought was a great situation with the guys on the team. Ben Feld, who's the current coach at Drexel, was a senior at the time on the team, and he kind of helped early when I was still, after I committed, I guess, to Drexel, and he kind of helped get me acclimated. It was really, and a lot of the guys on the team were just great to me. It was real. I walked into an easy, very comfortable situation, and fortunately was able to play right away, get playing in tournaments. And that was, I think, huge that I was able to play basically, you know, every event that fall and spring freshman year. So you have, all of a sudden you have all these tournaments lined up for you in a row, right? You're playing five events in the fall every week. You get into a little bit of a rhythm and you can kind of really see, kind of learn how to compete that way, which is something that I hadn't really been exposed to before. So it wasn't, walking into the situation Drexel I had was fantastic. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it right away and through the entire four plus years that I was there.
You have so much success at Drexel. You know, you were, I think, men's golfer of the year 1 year, three-time all conference, 11-time conference golfer of the week. Did it always feel, I don't know if natural's the word, but did you ever surprise yourself? Or did it just seem like, hey, I'm playing well and this is the next logical step, and if I do well, this happens? Did it just all kind of make sense?
I don't want to say, I don't think I surprised myself. I mean, certainly, it was like the same thing I was saying kind of about college or when I was younger. I just tried to get incrementally a little bit better, and I kept seeing improvements that made me realize, oh, okay, maybe I can do this. Okay, this, my scoring average is a little better this year. Okay, I have more top tens this year. You know, these little tiny things, or even in what you're doing every day, you can see it a little bit. So I think I was rookie of the year my freshman year, which was not, all these things were nice. I certainly enjoyed it, but I think it was just a matter of just, yeah, I was just noticing that I was getting a little better, and I was able to focus. So by the end of the year, like, of junior, senior year, after I was a little bit into it, I mean, I was pretty determined to try to win events and to try to do as best as I could to put myself up there as one of the best players in the conference. I mean, that was certainly a goal for me. And I always just figured if I gave myself a chance to win events, right, if I just hung around near the top of the leaderboard, you're going to like in almost accidentally win a few of them at the very least. Right. And then if you have a really good week, maybe you can do well. I set goals for myself that included some of that stuff. It wasn't the only focus. It wasn't the thing that drove me the most, but it was certainly in the back of my mind.
Did you ever feel, as you're having this success and you kind of become the centerpiece of the team, did you ever feel pressure? And if you did, how did you deal with that to continue to have success?
I don't think so. I think in college golf, even though you're a team, you are still an individual, right? So I always looked at it as, I'm going to try to play the best that I possibly can myself. And if I do that, it's going to help the team, right? It's not like another sport where you're reliant on each other. You are, in the sense that the final score for the team depends on what everybody shoots, but you are in control of your own, you know, you're totally in control of yourself, and then everything else just kind of happens. So I figured that for the sake of the team, if I just focused on myself and played the best I could, that was going to help the team. And then if you had a rough day here or there, that's golf. I mean, it's just going to happen, and it happens to everybody. And we do drop, you always drop one score. You take the best four out of five in college golf. So no, I never felt a ton of pressure. I just tried to do the best I could, and just tried to trust that that would work out.
So I'm curious, when along the line here, do you, I'm sure everybody that plays at a certain level of golf has dreams and ambitions of, boy, it'd be great to go pro, or I think I can go pro. But I'm imagining there's kind of, if not a moment, a time period where that transitions from kind of a vague idea or dream to, you know what, with where I am right now and what I can do, this is legitimate. Like, there are now concrete things, concrete steps that I am capable of achieving that could get me on the road to being a pro. Do you remember when that started to crystallize for you?
Honestly, I don't think it did until the 2016 US Open. I think that was the first time. You know, like I said, up until this point, I just wanted to compete. You know, originally you just want to be, you want to compete locally, right? You want to be, you want to play in GAP events, also, you know, Philadelphia events, and compete with these guys and try to compete with the best players. And I, you know, I played some more national amateur events, and you want to try to play as best you could in those. So it's kind of like a little bit of a professional golf was not my focus for most of my competitive golf life, right? It wasn't something I was necessarily thinking about, even if maybe there was a tiny bit of it in maybe the back of my mind, until probably the 2016 US Open. And I knew because I was at Drexel that I still had a fifth year of school, because I went in as a five-year degree. So my career at Drexel wrapped up then in April, I guess, of 16, my fourth year, my senior year. And I knew I still had an extra year of school to go. So turning pro immediately was never going to be an option. I wasn't going to leave school early. So it was kind of a decision that I was able to push back at that time. I was like, all right, well, I'll just think about that later. I'm just going to keep playing amateur events and see how I do. And then I got another year of school, so I can kind of, if I keep getting better, maybe I'll think about it. And then the 2016 US Open was when I first thought, okay, maybe this is something I should really think about doing. It wasn't going to advance the timeline at all. I still had at least a year to go, but getting a chance to play in that and to see real, you know, to see the guys on the PGA Tour I played with, practice rounds with literally some of the best players in the world at the time, coincidentally. And you're like, okay, maybe this is something I should start to think about.
I want to talk about the U.S. Open in a second, but when the Drexel career, when you look at it in its totality, what are some of the best memories that come back when you think about your time as a Dragon?
The best memories by far are the trips with your teammates and your coaches. Like, we took some really unique trips over the years. We went down the Outer Banks every year to play ODU's tournament. That was... you stay right on the beach in a hotel. We go out, you know, you're hanging out and doing the trips that we did is by far my best memories of college golf. Drive the van rides, like all these little things where you're just spending so much time with each other in hotels. I got to think golf is different than other sports in the sense that there's so much time you spend competing, right? If you play a soccer game or even a football game, you know, it's a couple hours and then you're done. These golf tournaments are entire weekends where you're spending time together in hotels and then competing sometimes you're competing for 10 plus hours a day if you're playing 36 holes, you know, so it's a long thing. And Mike Dinda, our head coach, and Ben and everybody just did such a great job of like making sure things were fun. Like if we went to a new place, we'd always try to get some of the local flair. We didn't necessarily just eat at Outback or the generic restaurant, right? We'd try to go somewhere local. We'd try to do something fun, playing wiffle ball on the beach. We took a tournament. We played St. Bonaventure's tournament every year, and Dinda is from up that way. So we'd go and play his home course the weekend before and then before the practice round. So it was like a whole thing, all these unique trips that were just so awesome that are by far my favorite memories of college golf. And one of the things I'm so thankful that I went to Drexel at, because, you know, I don't know, I can't speak for everybody else's experience, but, you know, we definitely made it fun and had a good time on those trips.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with former Drexel University golfer Chris Crawford right after this.
When someone at KYW News Radio goes out to cover a story, there's a lot that just doesn't make it on the radio.
I cannot believe this is going on.
In a world of lazy arguments, it's one of the laziest.
I'm Jay Scott Smith, and I talk to my colleagues about everything you didn't get to hear on the air on the podcast, The Rundown, from KYW News Radio. Listen free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
And we are back. Our guest this week is golfer Chris Crawford. So the U.S. Open, you've qualified three times. First time is in 2016. And if I remember correctly, to qualify, you had to hit a monster putt with all the pressure on to get into that first U.S. Open. It was like a 40, 45 footer. Am I correct?
Yeah. No, I think it was probably about 40 feet on 18 at Canoe Brook. Yeah, I did not play that hole very well, and was fortunate to even end up on that spot. I played well in the local qualifier, which was I played the local one for the Gap at Miss Elm Springs. Played well. That was like mid-May. You know, I get to the sectional and I played like a great round in the morning, and all of a sudden I'm in contention. It was in like third place in the morning or something, and you know, the things just kind of came together. I made a lot of putts in the first round, just played really well. And the second round was not going nearly as smoothly. It was a rockier road for sure. And I was struggling a little bit, and it hung in there for really the entire day until 16. So my 34th hole of the day, made bogey, played the hole poorly, hit a bad tee shot, second shot goes short right, whatever, make bogey. And Ben Feld was caddying for me, and I asked him, I hit a good tee shot on 17. I asked him, finally, I wasn't aware of the scoring the entire afternoon. I said, all right, well, you know, I figure we got to be close here. Where do we stand? And he said, something along the lines of, you know, par par, you're in, right? You're on the number, you're good. Ended up, I was like, okay, you know, I was glad that I got the tee shot off before I asked that question, because that tee shot was pretty difficult and I hadn't hit a good one for a couple holes. So I only had like pitching wedge in, kind of made a mess of it, hit the pitching wedge to like 30 or 40 feet and three putted on 17. So now I know I need birdie on 18 to get through. I tried to compose myself on the tee shot, and 18 at Canoe Brook North is like a 600 yard par five. Tee shot's a little downhill. It's kind of narrow. And I remember hitting the tee shot. I made pretty good contact on the club face, felt good. And I looked up and the ball just takes an absolute rope hook, just 40 or 50 yards left, minimally, into the adjacent hole, into the adjacent fairway. I think it's 13th hole runs parallel to 18. And there's all these trees down the left of 18 that kind of block you from coming back into the fairway. It's not an easy shot. And I think I might've been in the first cut, maybe not the fairway. And but basically playing back into the actual hole, playing back in the 18th fairway was not an option. So I had Ben walk off. We did not play this hole very quickly, which I think was acceptable under the circumstances. I had Ben walk off the yardage all the way down the 13th fairway. I kind of hit like a mediocre layup. I still had six iron in over the trees at this point into the 18th green. It was like 185, something like that. And hit the six iron. Remember again, making good contact, looking up. The ball caught like a little leaf on the top of a tree, but didn't actually affect the flight, luckily. And we didn't see where it ended up. So I heard some like light applause because there was a little bit of a crowd around the 18th green at this point. We heard some light applause. So even though I didn't see it land, I was like, okay, it's got to be somewhere close to the green. I have a chance. And at this point, you know, at least if I made par, I could still get into a playoff, and there would have been a big playoff for one spot. And we got up there and I saw that the ball was on the green about 40 feet away. And I was absolutely thrilled that I didn't have to chip and try to get this ball up and down. Just having a putt was just like a relief at that point. The pin was in the back left, and I remember reading the putt with Ben, and we were like, it's not, you know, as far as these putts go, it's actually not that difficult of a putt. It's uphill. It's going to break a little right to left. Not a lot. It's like a couple inches outside right. And I just tried to tell myself to give it a chance. Just hit a decent putt and give it a chance. And I think I hit it a little hard, and it kind of caught that left edge and went in. And it was a great memory, great moment for me, for both of us. And, you know, there was a lot of people around, like I said, kind of waiting for that to finish. So they were able to capture it on video, and it was, it was pretty fortunate. The whole thing was a little lucky, but I guess that happened. You know, you need that sometimes.
Do you remember, like, did it seem like it took forever to get in the hole? Like, do you remember your emotions as the ball's going closer to the hole?
You kind of black out a little bit. Like, I do have a memory of it, but it's all a little bit of a blur, honestly, especially like right after it goes in. I just remember hitting it, looking up when it was probably about halfway or a little past halfway there. And I knew it looked pretty good. And I was like, please just catch the lip. Like, it kind of catches the left side of the hole. I was like, please just catch the hole. And it was almost like a little bit of a shock when I saw it catch the hole and drop instead of like whipping out, because it was coming in hard. And then I don't really remember the next couple seconds after that, except for just being really excited. So the level of excitement is just so much. And you walk off the green, it's just like a combination of excitement and relief and like kind of disbelief a little bit, you know, and it was just great.
To that point, how long does it take before it really kind of sinks in that you're going to play in the U.S. Open? Because I'm sure there's got to be a period of just kind of surrealness of, and it's kind of this idea that everyone's talking about, but is there a moment when it kind of hits you like, wow, like, you know, I don't know if it was a email for information or somebody calls you and says, this is what you have to do. Like, right, what do you remember when it really kind of smacked you in the face?
Well, you know, after it happened, like a couple minutes after, I was doing some interviews. I remember thinking, because I had played Oakmont before, and I remember thinking, oh my God, I have to actually go play this golf course now in U.S. Open conditions. Like, how am I going to do that? This place is going to be impossible. But yeah, the next couple days, you know, they send you some stuff, they send you information, they try to get everything sorted out. And thankfully, with it being in Pennsylvania, the planning wasn't that difficult. You know, you just get a hotel, and some of the other, you know, there are times if there's flights involved or more expensive places. But, you know, I drove out by myself on Friday afternoon, I think. So it all happened so quickly. You know, the qualifiers on Monday, and then the tournament's a week and a half away. So that Friday I drove out to Pittsburgh, you know, the Pittsburgh area on the turnpike by myself. And I think that's probably when I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, this is, I'm actually driving to go play this tournament now. And it was just such a really peaceful, enjoyable ride, you know, 4.5-5 hours dead straight, mostly flat out the turnpike just by myself. And I was like, you know, this is awesome. This is really great. Enjoy this.
So what is it like to that first time? You know, when you talk about playing the practice rounds with some of the best and you're out there, you know, what is that like being a part of that group that's playing in such a prestigious high level tournament?
You know, it's bizarre because you know, these guys are doing it every week on the PGA Tour. And I'm obviously not. I'm playing, you know, the tournaments I'm playing in. And then you get there and you're treated basically like a tour pro, even though you're an amateur qualifier, they treat you unbelievably well. So that part is strange. You all of a sudden you're in the clubhouse with these guys that you're recognizing, all these guys that you've been watching on TV for years, guys that have won majors, just kind of walking around, kind of doing the same thing you're doing, practicing, playing, trying to get ready to play the best they can. And yeah, I mean, they treat you so incredibly at these events. So you really do feel like it's like you're a part of it for a couple of days, you know? And I was lucky. So I got there pretty early. Like I said, I got out there Friday night. I did registration Saturday morning, and Jason Day had been one of the first people to register for the tournament. He was out there pretty early. And when you go through the registration process, they have just a T-sheet on the computer where you can pick out your practice round times and kind of schedule everything for the rest of the week. And he had already picked out a few times. I saw his name on like a Tuesday morning practice round. He was by himself. And I asked the person on the computer, I was like, hey, you know, what do you think if I put my name in with him? And she was like, well, you know, sometimes some of these guys, if they see a name they don't know, they might reschedule or do something. But she was like, you never know. You might as well try it. So I said, all right, I'll put my name in with him. It's like Tuesday morning at 9 something. And he kept the time. So Tuesday morning, he was the number one ranked player in the world at the time. And, you know, Tuesday morning, I was with him and a couple other guys just ready to go. And he could not have been more nice to me, more nice to some random amateur that, you know, you'd never met before. And, you know, that was a pretty incredible experience. We had bigger galleries, obviously, bigger galleries for that than I did at any point in the tournament. So that was the best preparation you could get. You know, the first tee's lined with people. Like, well, if I can get this ball airborne, I can handle this. I think I'll be fine for the rest of the tournament. And we played 9 holes together, and it was great. I mean, and then the next day, Wednesday, I played with, coincidentally, played with Justin Rose and Matt Fitzpatrick, and they were both fantastic also. So I got really lucky with a couple of the pairings I had to, you know, the Jason Day pairing, I kind of went out. I sought it out a little bit, but the other ones I got just kind of lucky and, I ended up playing with some of the best players in the world.
So you've qualified for 3 U.S. Opens. I'm sure there's nothing like the first time, especially the way hitting that putt to go in. But do they all hit differently depending on where you are in your career and the circumstances? Like, is the emotions, yes, they're all, it's the same?
No, they definitely all hit differently.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, the first one was exciting. It was the first time. It was a little bit of a surprise. It was wow. It was in my home state, which was special. So we had a lot of people who were able to go, a lot of friends, family, Drexel people, Holy Ghost people that were able to go out and watch that. Cause you know, it was perfect. I mean, Oakmont is historic. It's spectacular. I couldn't have picked it. You basically can't pick a better venue for an open for the first time than Oakmont. The second time around with Aaron Hills, you know, in the qualifier, I knew what to expect this time out of the sectional. I knew I had done it. So there's a little bit of added confidence there. And it was just a little bit more no frills probably the second time. It was similar in the sense that I happened to play a good round in the morning. And then the afternoon was a little bit more, it was less exciting, way less heroics involved. It was much more boring, which I probably preferred at experiencing this, you know, it's like, okay. And, but then this year in some ways actually meant the most because, you know, it was the first time as a professional and it had been 4 years. Those memories were starting to feel a little distant of getting through. And there have certainly been some struggles along the way over the last couple of years as a professional. You know, your life experiences are just different at this point. So this year, it was a different golf course. The first two were at Canoebrook. This one was at Woodmont down in Maryland. This one probably meant the most from the standpoint of you know, kind of showing myself that I could do it again, right? After a couple of years. And like I said, some years where I struggled a little bit, it was kind of more satisfying probably in some ways than the first two.
How do you feel coming out of the U.S. Opens? Because it's such a difficult, you know, the courses, I'm sure, are difficult. The hole placement, it's just everything is such high level. Do you come out feeling like you've played really well as you could at this point in your career, given the circumstances? Are there times you're frustrated that you left shots out there? I mean, I'm guessing for the most part, it's a mix of everything. But how do you usually feel coming out of these tournaments?
This year, I was kind of frustrated because I didn't feel like I played well at Torrey. I really didn't drive the ball well, which was just pretty much everything. I couldn't play that golf course if I didn't drive the ball accurately, and I just missed too many fairways. And so that was a little bit tough, you know, because I knew kind of what to expect this time around, and I just didn't have it. Just didn't play well. The first two times, especially Aaron Hills, that was probably the best I played of the three. That was the closest I came to making the cut. You could leave a tournament like that and say, hey, I played pretty well, even though I didn't make the cut. I'm pretty happy. I can move forward with this and learn from this. And I certainly felt the same way about Torrey. I'm like, all right, there's a lot to be learned here. Nothing exposes you like a US Open. I mean, it's as hard as it's going to get ever, you know that. And so it really puts a spotlight on all of your flaws and deficiencies as a player. You go through that, you are able to kind of get a decent assessment of where you stand and how to move forward. And, this year was a little weird in the sense that I didn't play a lot after the US Open because scheduling just didn't work out. I had the status on the form tour, but I actually missed a few of the Monday qualifiers because of playing at Torrey. So I wasn't in a couple events. There wasn't a lot of mini tour stuff. So I kind of came back from Torrey this year and didn't compete again for like almost a month just because there wasn't really much for me to compete in. So that was a little strange, but then I was able to kind of move and start competing a little bit more, move into more of a regular schedule by the time late July came around. But, I don't know. It's easy to get down on yourself if you struggle, but then you have to remember it's the US Open. What can I learn from this? And the answer is usually a lot. You just have to try to stay positive and know that it's really difficult to just jump into that situation when you're not a PGA Tour player to just jump in and play well. It's really, really hard to do. And I don't know if that, I think answers.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm curious if you could only play one golf course for the rest of your life, do you have one that it could be the only one you played, it would be that one?
Well, that's a tough question that I have already played. I don't know. Obviously Oakmont's one of my favorite courses in the world. But Oakmont is so difficult that every day for the rest of my life might get a little painful after a while. I can only pitch out of those bunkers so many times. Pine Valley is one of my favorite courses ever. I mean, Marion's incredible. I've been lucky that I've played a lot of good golf courses. That's a tough question. I love Riviera. I'd probably, Marion's great. I mean, Pinehurst number two is one of my favorite places to play. I love golf. I love all of golf down in there, a couple of the golf courses down there. Even the non-Pinehurst courses are awesome. But I don't know if there is one. I think I'd like to mix it around a little bit. I've never played Augusta, so I can't make a comment on that
yet.
Yeah. Cyprus looks incredible. I've never been out there. I love to play some golf. There's a lot of places on my bucket list that hopefully I like to get to.
I'm curious, are you able to play golf just for fun? And what I say, like, if you and your friends just go out on a week when you're not playing in a tournament and you just go out to a course, are you able to just unwind playing golf, like kind of flip the switch where you're not micro managing your swing and worrying about what this and just go out there and whatever happens happens? Or is it kind of impossible to, when it's your livelihood, to not kind of take stock of every shot regardless of the circumstances?
I do that. I play with friends all the time. I try to. It's probably a little different now than it used to be. I have to struggle with that sometimes, where it might be a little harder. You might try to overanalyze things maybe a little bit more because you kind of feel that pressure to be a professional and to perform. But I think it's important to play and have fun doing it. Like, to your playing golf is a job, obviously, in a sense it is, but if it's not a job that you love doing, then you shouldn't be doing it, right? So it's important for someone in the position like this, like me, or to remember that why you're trying to play professionally is because you love the game and want to be the best you can at it, and not to overburden yourself with some sort of external pressure of feeling like you're a professional, however you define that. So playing for fun, I thankfully get to do a lot of it with friends and with my dad and brother and our friends and everything. And it's very important to just go out there and be like, hey, this game is great. I enjoy doing this. I enjoy doing it with good people and just talking, and not to take everything too personal all the time, because there's plenty of time to practice. There's no shortage of time to practice and overthink things on the road or when you're home. So letting loose and enjoying yourself is very, very important.
And I'm just curious, are your friends anything like my friends, where if I played golf all the time and then I went out and played with them and I hit a bad shot, I would never hear the end of it? Oh, I thought you qualified for the Open. That's great. Like, do you have to deal with that when you're just banging around with your buddies?
not too much, honestly. Not too much in that sense. Maybe a couple comments here or there, but not for the most part, no. Not that it would offend me. I wouldn't mind.
Chris Crawford, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate you having me on. Hope I was able to answer all your questions and be a decent guest. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Chris Crawford for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show and you want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media, and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life, and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't.
You just need GoDaddy Airo. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Airo uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Airo. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.